Welcome to the Arbitration Conversation with Amy Schmitz.
Hello, and welcome to the Arbitration Conversation. In this conversation, we're going to talk to a leader in mediation and arbitration and dispute resolution more generally. With us, we have Harry Samaras. She's an experienced domestic and international full-time neutral. She has arbitrated and mediated hundreds of complex matters over the past 20 plus years with a focus on commercial transactions, intellectual property, technology, and business issues across a broad range of industries and technologies. Her experience is really vast. I mean, she has done so many different types of cases. She had been a former in-house counsel and advocate, and she really understands the importance of well-planned and well-executed ADR processes. I could say a lot more because she's a leader in the field. She's got a book, really a lot to say. So I'm excited that we have this conversation with her. So Harry, thanks for taking time.
Thank you for having me.
I'm looking forward to this. I think we're going to get some really good information, good background, good tips. And I'm sure that I'm going to be listening to it over and over. So first of all, how did you get into dispute resolution, being a full-time neutral?
Well, when I began my legal career back in the 80s, other than negotiation, I must say ADR wasn't mentioned much at all. Certainly not in school and law school, and not even in my, you know, in the jobs that I had out of law school. But I had been, as you mentioned, I had been in-house counsel at a couple companies, and it was the very first company where I worked that inspired me to learn about ADR. The company was very litigious, but it was also creative in using ADR, and that stuck with me and inspired me to learn really first what ADR was about and then how to use it, strategically.
That's really important, you know, having that sort of true client perspective being in-house. I mean, I think that's a really interesting, different, and especially important way to come into it, because I feel like so often it's former litigators that then hated litigation so much that they turned to ADR. So I think it gives you a different perspective.
You're absolutely right. It did. And it stuck with me through even my next job as in-house counsel. And I brought what I learned to that company and, you know, in the way of just dealing with outside counsel better, representing my client better, and kind of getting into really applying what I was learning along the way, and I think it really benefited the client. I know it really stimulated my interest in going forward.
Yeah. I mean, excellent place to be coming from. And sounds like really a great sort of, a lot of people would just say, oh, this is great. I like the security of just kind of working within an in-house or within a law firm, but you have your own ADR firm. So what brought you there? I mean, that's awesome.
Well, it was interesting. After I left my, the company, I took a hiatus, and then I decided to really delve into getting credentialing in the ADR field, taking a course in mediation, taking courses in arbitration, and getting on panels. And that was, felt like I really wanted to kind of start and build a good foundation for myself in ADR. So that was what I did, formal, you know, education, credentials, and experience. And I thought at that point in time, that was about 20 years ago, over 20 years ago, I said, okay, I'm going to, start my practice now. But as it happened, I had some connections. My husband and I just moved up from the Washington, D.C. area to Philadelphia, and I had some connections here. And when I was telling people what I was going to do, they said, gee, that sounds great. We love to use you for your litigation experience in intellectual property cases. You could do, and so this is from two firms I got offers, you could pursue your ADR, you know, practice, and you could help us with IP litigation, which is what they wanted to get out of it. And what I did was, since I did have some sense that there are challenges to making a living as a neutral, I thought that might be a good idea. that I would, instead of going off on my own, that I would go to a firm, which I did. I chose it from one of the firms to go with, and I would kind of establish myself in the ADR field as a neutral, learn what I needed to learn to kind of catch myself up with where I was as a lawyer. And then I would, not quit my day job. That worked well for about 6 years. And then I just decided if I was really going to know whether my practice was going to take off or not, you really can't have those responsibilities to clients. You really can't have the responsibilities to the firm, which I enjoy, but there are responsibilities. And you really have to eliminate any possibility of a conflict. And although I was very lucky, I had the full support of the firm I was with in terms of what I was doing, there were the inevitable conflicts. So I just thought, decrease the responsibilities and decrease the chance of conflicts. And so I went off on my own about 15 years ago. And it was a monumental decision, but the best decision, one of the best decisions in my life.
That is excellent. And you're right. I didn't even think about that. But of course, like with conflicts, that makes a lot of sense. And freedom, I suppose, even if your firm was supportive, being able to have your own firm really gives you more flexibility.
The freedom was very important to me. and yes, I had the support of my firm, but the freedom to start one's own practice or business and just say, okay, there's no committee.
It's right.
It's right. The one. It's going to happen or not happen. You're going to learn, or you're going to make mistakes and learn along the way. And that's okay too.
Exactly. I love that. Yeah. And you can really sort of dive into so many different areas of dispute resolution and not be kind of stuck in any one lane.
That's another good point. Yes.
So given your practice and what you've seen over the years, and I'm sure there's been an ebb and flow of different types of cases, what are sort of some growth areas that you have seen with respect to arbitration, especially technology-related disputes?
Well, it's interesting. Certainly, because so many U.S. technology companies do business overseas, or you can look at it the other way, overseas business, overseas companies do business here, disputes invariably arise. And so I see over the years, I've seen my practice have an increase in international cases involving technology companies. And I also see when I go to do conflict checks and I look at firms, I look at lawyers, I see that oftentimes it's the larger law firms, but you're seeing practices, like arbitration, international arbitration is a common term that's used on websites of law firms. So you see it's being acknowledged as a separate practice area. So that's one thing, one observation I would make. Another one, I can't say that I've seen trends, but I see more along the line of as new relationships arise, there are inevitable disputes. So Bitcoin disputes, smart contracts on blockchain disputes, you name it. If there's something new, whether it's in the technology or whether it's in the subject matter of the contract, that kind of technology, or whether it may be other technology that's used, it relates to arbitration, you see, that is the subject of arbitrations come or in disputes and then either mediation or arbitration. Right. But the other two things I would say is I've also seen real growth in more creative uses of ADR in technology cases. So for example, as counsel themselves seem to be getting more comfortable using ADR and in particular arbitration, they have a better understanding of the value that it can bring to their clients. So for example, I'll give you two examples of that. There are times when I'm engaged for an arbitration, I see the arbitration clause, I see that there was a pre-dispute arbitration clause, and then I see that the parties are giving me an ad hoc process. Well, why are they doing that? And usually it's very well done. It's because they feel comfortable with the process. They now see the dispute that has materialized. And oftentimes, if it's a dispute where if the companies are in a very valuable contract relationship, they want to just, let's get this dispute out of the way. We don't want to litigate. We want to arbitrate. We want to keep the emotions, somewhat more contained than they would be in litigation. And let's just keep the costs and the time down. And so that's something that I see more. And when I kind of look beyond like who those counsel are, oftentimes characteristically, they are from firms where you see this arbitration practice and they have a lot of experience in arbitration.
These are important insights. And I have to say, I've seen the same. I mean, even just the growth of conferences and discussion especially within law firms, having whole practices set aside for arbitration and dispute resolution and mixing and matching. How about that? I mean, especially with sort of mixing and matching mediation with arbitration, not necessarily remaining in one lane, maybe a Med-Arb or even Arb-Med.
Yeah, no, that's another thing. I think that you're quite right. When people go to the more experience that they have, or they're going to programs where you start to see where people are talking about mixing ADR processes. So for example, I see that more. That's like another, I'm going to say, trend or something. Maybe it's more observational that I've seen in my practice over the years where one time, in fact, within the past year, I was called upon, engaged to be one of three non-binding arbitrators. So we were, we were asked to render a decision in a case that was non-binding. The dispute was in a mediation. They had mediated for, it was a patent infringement dispute, I should say. They mediated for about 6 months, and then they got really hung up on certain factual disputes, infringement and invalidity. And the mediator suggested this non-binding arbitration, whereby, just in a nutshell, three of us, we were given the same information. There was a one-day hearing. We were not permitted to talk to one another at any time, about the merits. And we were given by the parties and the mediator, we were given special interrogatories to fill out on these factual issues. And we never knew what the others were going to say. And that was a good example. That was just one example. I was one time called upon as a potential mediator to sit on a mini trial in a case where the parties ended up settling, but they said, okay, if after the mini trial, the executives that were there cannot settle the dispute, then we'd like for you to mediate. And so I was there, given the information there during the whole time. And I can give you lots of other examples, which just go to the fact that I see this change over time with people becoming more comfortable and using ADR more strategically. And oftentimes in technology cases where the value of the relationship is so significant.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point. I mean, the relationships, and especially when they're continually working together, in some ways, it's almost like construction, where relationship is also incredibly important. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why we saw creative use of mediation and arbitration and mixed methods in construction from many, many years ago, even back when I was in practice. And technology strikes me as having those same sort of subcontractor and relationship motivations.
Yeah, and no one wants to, people don't get together to build half a building.
No.
It's the same thing. I mean, there are times when people do have to leave what would have been very lucrative arrangements. It happens. but if they don't have to, it's the same thing, you know. And oftentimes I can tell you that when people, let's say they have some success on a part under the contract, on a part of the contract, and they see how lucrative it is, and not only being lucrative, oftentimes in technology cases, you know, these are they're pharmaceutical companies, as an example, and they want to bring, you know, the drug to market. They want to help people. So that's a part of it too. You know, you want to, if you have to abandon an agreement and the work under an agreement, you're abandoning people that might need that drug or medical device. Right.
Yeah. You know, and also, I think also that arbitration and using privacy and confidentiality within an arbitration or mediation for that matter can be very, very important in technology where you might have business secrets and you might have other IP that you really want to protect. And also, of course, the expertise of the arbitrator on technological aspects.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That comes into play. I mean, oftentimes when I can talk to people offline or friends of mine who were in-house and I ask them why they would choose arbitration, that's what I've heard. You never know with people coming before you, what exactly the reason is for, you know, oftentimes it's a pre-dispute resolution clause and they, you know, there were other people besides the people that are before you that put that in and you never know, you know.
Yeah. Right.
But it's interesting, but with submission agreements, sometimes it's obvious that a submission agreement for an arbitration where there's not a dispute and they decide to use it, oftentimes it's okay, we're divorcing and we want to expedite this divorce, or it's for the reasons I already gave to maintain the relationship.
Right. Absolutely. You know, and also when we think about, I mean, even you're mentioning pre-dispute arbitration clauses, all too often, of course, arbitration does get sort of a bad rap about pre-dispute in consumer and employment or, you know, oh, did these people really want to arbitrate? But it's very effective and can be especially effective in many different contexts. But do you have any other ideas or insights for improving sort of excellence in arbitration, especially with technology disputes?
Yeah, you know, I have some thoughts are more specific, and then I have a general thought. Better use of experts come to mind. I oftentimes get frustrated when, you know, I know the parties are paying a lot of money for experts in technology cases. And I believe that they could be used better. Oftentimes they seem to be used as another person on the litigation team. You know, as someone you read their report and it reads like a brief, not like a, you know the difference. It's you know it when you see it, a kind of a thing. It reads a little bit too much like much like a brief, hitting on the issues. And then when they go to testify on cross-examination, they're sometimes, you know, they don't realize that they could be prepared better to answer questions from the arbitrator or on cross-examination, better meaning, hey, just you're here as an expert, listen to the question and, you know, just answer the question honestly with your expertise. Because at the end of the day, I don't want to say, you know, overall, they don't win or lose the case because maybe they do in a particular case, but I always feel that they're really there to try to help the panel. And their expertise doesn't come through. What comes through is the side that they're on. And I feel that at the end of the day, it doesn't do the arbitration panel doesn't help us, which is really what we need, the help, and it doesn't do justice having been a client to the client. So that's sometimes a little frustrating to me. And then I guess the other thing that I do think that I've spoken about this before. I've actually given a couple of presentations, and it's in technology cases, I believe that advocates could do a better job, you know, explaining the technology, and more specifically in relation to the legal issues. So they're so into the technology and the legal issues and representing the client, of course. And I think there's sometimes an assumption that when you have an arbitration panel that has technology background, there's not much to explain. But in essence, you know, when you're trying to win the case and persuade the panel, there may be things about the technology. There may be, tests that were run, reports that were generated, things like that, where you really want to make sure that you're explaining those things along the way. And oftentimes in technology cases, from the beginning, it's not, you know, notice pleading, it's fact pleading. Good attorneys from the beginning will start there, and then they'll reinforce the themes, the technology, like I said, the results, test results, things like that, whatever they think the panel needs to know about in their brief that they file before the hearing, their evidentiary hearing. They'll reinforce it during the hearing and then in post-hearing briefs. And that's really important. And understanding that that's a part of advocacy and technology cases and how it's intertwined with the legal issues, I think is important.
I really think those are all excellent points. And I have to say, it's funny. I can imagine counsel sort of coaching experts to be on a particular side almost, but that really defeats the purpose, right? And it is true. We just need the expert to actually help the panel, help the judge figure out. And then definitely connecting. I really like the point about connecting with the legal issues and having it more explained in a very clear-cut way why that particular test or that particular technological aspect is important from a legal perspective and why it matters in the case. And it might be that sometimes the attorneys aren't even entirely sure how that works. And so they're just throwing everything out there and hoping that the arbitrators can kind of decipher it. Maybe not, but I think that sometimes it does get confusing with all the different technologies, and especially if you're talking about something intellectual property related, but also like causation type questions that come up when you're talking about different technologies and the damages.
Yeah, and another thing is you hit on it before. You know, the expert's credibility is not just generated from how much they charge an hour or from a illustrative career in a particular area. A lot of times through arbitrator questions, through cross-examination, the credibility and the real knowledge base comes through. And so that's something that I don't think people give too much, they don't think about that when they're choosing experts and when they're preparing them to testify.
Oh, definitely. That's a very good point. And you wonder sort of what the and it might even be that this is someone who's on a list and they've already always kind of chosen that person for that topic. But I wonder also if sometimes there is this use of experts perhaps in cases that they're not actually well versed on the particular aspects that are most important to that case, but it just happens to be someone who the firm has worked with before in kind of a tangentially related issue. I don't know, but I have seen situations where the expert testimony is not actually on point with the issues at play.
You know, one thing I would say that I want to give a shout out to factual experts. What I mean by that is a fact witness that can provide information in some cases that an expert can. I once had a case where it was very technology oriented. And there were fact experts from the company on both sides. These were folks that had kind of grown up. I mean, they may have been engineers and they grew up with these companies and they had their careers there. And you know what? It was amazing. They were so effective. They were so convincing. They were so helpful. They didn't have an axe to grind. You know, in other words, I can't tell you that that's where what their, it was as though their mindset was that way, but I certainly didn't talk to them about it.
Right.
I'm here. Let the lawyers do what they need to do. I'm here to answer the questions and to tell you what I know about this process, blah, blah, blah. I go in every day. I've done it for years. And it was not only refreshing, it was incredibly helpful.
Yeah, actually, that even kind of the reason for my comment was thinking about this is in construction, but how often a project manager who was there on the site every day gave such helpful information over and above any highly paid engineer architect who was there to be an expert witness. Nothing against the experts either, but it was just very on point, knew the process, really helped explain the case. And so those factual witnesses who really understand inside and out what's happening can be incredibly helpful, I think, in all sorts of cases.
You had mentioned earlier about when you asked me the question about excellence in arbitration, I wanted to mention a more general observation that I've seen over the years. And it's interesting because as I see people my age and older who are retiring as litigators, and I'm working with younger people, you know, in their, and I'm going to say, you know, looking at people in their 40s and in their 30s, where they've had more influence in their lives using ADR. So you have more, I mean, you know this as a professor, where you have you're teaching, you know, where there are more ADR courses being taught in law school. And you have the ability to influence students, future lawyers, to use ADR. And with your experience as an arbitrator, to help them understand why it's helpful in their practice for clients. I recently heard, and I have been following it along the way, that and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that I believe ADR is going to be taught in the bar.
Yep. There's going to be ADR questions or ADR related questions on the bar exam.
That's going to be, I think, a game changer, because if you look at, you know, you just think about litigation, you think about, okay, rules of civil procedure are taught. You know, what are those used for? Well, you know what they're used for. They're used in litigation.
Right.
You know, that's reinforced. Oh, they're so important because they're on the bar. Litigation is constantly, as a dispute resolution process, constantly reinforced. But having ADR taught more in law school, even though it's still, I'm thinking it's still an elective, having it taught on the bar, and seeing the change, as I mentioned earlier, seeing practice areas in law firms be, you know, encompass ADR, and seeing all the changes that I've seen, I think that in terms of excellence, that is going to be part of the evolution of excellence in arbitration, actually.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I'm ecstatic that they're acknowledging. I, like you, when I was in law school, there was no ADR class. And so I was really interested. I'm thinking to myself, okay, if we're helping people, real people with real problems and real conflict, don't we need to learn something about conflict resolution more generally? So I actually took an ADR course in the psychology department while I was in law school in order to get some sort of, just to learn something about it. But I agree with you very strongly. And I do think it's exciting. I think a lot of law schools are moving to some sort of ADR or lawyering and problem solving type course in the first year of law school to really make sure that students from day one are not simply taught from a litigation perspective, because traditional model of law school is 100% litigation.
And I think that, yeah. I mean, I definitely realize that. In my book, you mentioned my book, I have a statement in the beginning that says ADR is, you know, not the side course, it's becoming the main course. Not like litigation, but certainly, and I certainly wouldn't do away with the litigation at all. But to be able to, from a client standpoint, wearing that client hat, which you never take off in a way, you just realize, as you were saying, that dispute resolution means so much more than litigation for so many different reasons.
Right. And it's what you end up doing. You know, I always tell students, when I first went to work at the law firm, I was in the litigation department, business litigation, and all we did was arbitration. So these names, I love, you know, great point about how law firms absolutely are developing dispute resolution, arbitration, mediation practices. Well, thank you so much for taking all this time. Really great insights, really good stuff to think about. And I couldn't agree more on the excellence in arbitration, as well as the other points with technology. I really think arbitration makes so much sense in technology-related disputes, arbitration and mediation. And thank you for sharing your insights as a true leader in the field. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I enjoyed it.
This podcast was brought to you by Arbitrate.com. For more information about Arbitrate.com's programs and content, please visit our website at www.arbitrate.com.